June 1, 2021. It's a lot for Pedro show. for Pedro's show. Happy Tuesday. First Tuesday of June 2021. We start off with John Coltrane doing Then I'll Be Tired of You. Not too happy of a title. But after that, we had Refrigerator with Bicycle. That's happy. Don't get tired of pedaling. Although pedaling can make you fucking tired. That's all right. You rest. People, Bud Matt's still at the Love Grotto. Pleasure Point a couple miles south here. But I'm not totally man alone because of those Estonian engineers with their Skype invention. I got Chris and Alan from Refrigerator with me. Welcome aboard, gentlemen.
Hey. Hey, Mike. How's it going?
And now, are you talking to me from those, where those cats, the Derry, Claremont, Montclair?
Yeah. Yeah. We're in Claremont.
Okay. What the fuck? Why do you put two towns next to each other with the same name backwards?
I think because the two towns are completely opposite.
Yeah, I know, because there used to be a club in a non-college one called the Green Door. It's now a parking lot of a mall. But you could tell there was two different kinds of towns.
Yeah, and you know what? I saw you the first time you played the Green Door. Many times we were all thrilled out here because out where we are, we never got acts like you guys. We were all into the SST stuff. And I think you were the first in that crew to play the Green Door. And we were just like, man, we could not believe you came to our little neck of the woods. We were so excited.
Well, they had, you know, part of the Green Door was not just the club. There was also a tell there, like crack house kind of trip.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. That was scary.
And at one time, the FBI and local police came to get me as I was going on stage because they thought I had brought a young woman over a border between Pennsylvania and Ohio, but it was not the same band. Well, maybe the same band, but different haircut. And also, their spelling included a U, and our bands didn't. So I got to play the gig. I'd do that shit anyway. Now, let's get into you guys' music history. Who wants to go first, Chris or Alan?
Go ahead, Alan.
Okay, I can start.
Alan, your earliest music recollection, please.
My earliest music recollections? My dad was a piano player. He was a classically trained piano player. As a kid, both my brother and I, we didn't know how good he was. We just knew he could play the theme to the old Batman TV show, Elton John, which I loved, the Goodbye Yellow Brick Road album. He would play all that stuff. And his brother was in a kind of a comedy vaudeville act that played at the Ed Sullivan Show back in the day.
Okay, so that's your earliest memories of music, is your father and your uncle. Now, obviously, your father being a piano player, you probably had one in the pad you grew up in. Did you ever jump on that fucking piano?
You know what? I took lessons for like 6 months after seeing Elton John at Dodger Stadium. Was disappointed that I could not play like my dad or Elton John after 6 weeks of piano lessons. I could barely play chopsticks.
Now, how old were you?
I was maybe 7 or 8.
We don't know about patience.
No.
So, you mean that frustration made you quit piano?
Yeah, so I quit the piano, and then my brother, who had more patience than me, picked up guitar, and we started a little joke band just with us, and we kind of went on from there, and I think we got progressively better from our first songs, which were funny things like Microwave Poodle, and we kind of evolved.
Well, let me ask you this. In school, were you in the choir, the marching band?
No, but I remember.
Okay, because some schools got rid of the program. That's why I always ask that shit. Now, what was the first record you bought for yourself? Was it Elton John?
Captain Fantastic.
Whoa. Okay. I guess right. Now, what was the first gig you saw? Was it that fucking Dodger Stadium gig?
Yes, it was. And it was for my birthday.
Okay.
So
did with your brother, did it have a name?
Yeah, it was called the Bucks, B-U-X.
And what did you play in that band?
I sang, not very well, but I sang.
Okay, that's an instrument. Fuck the voice. And what was the first Bucks gig?
Believe it or not, it was at the Green Door.
No, I believe it. You fucking lived there.
Yeah.
I had to make the hell ride from Pedro. Okay. How was it? Was it a success? Did they throw shit?
You know how bad it was? You're going to laugh. We had no idea. We thought we had these thrift store microphones, these crappy amplifiers. We thought, we don't need to go through a PA. So we told the Green Door we do not need to go through the PA. We can use our thrift store microphones and amps. It was horrible. It was the only time we did pay to play, which was, we learned that lesson early. We scared the whole crowd. We needed speed bumps at the exit. People just fled. We didn't even get heckled. They just left. We were that bad.
And Billy and the Descendants calls those gigs Hall Rakers. I think there's an all album called Hall Raker. It's about clearing out a pad. Usually people do it with a lot of volume, but you guys did it with bad playing. But how old were you? I mean, you were young.
Yeah. I was maybe 20, maybe everybody else was like between 17 and 20, 21. We were all very, very, very young.
And can I ask you about the material? Was it copying records or was it writing your own stuff?
Writing our own stuff.
Great.
Like I Microwave Poodle, Blood is Thicker Than Pepsi, just ridiculous kind of. We were inspired by SST, Dead Kennedys, all that kind of stuff.
Well, Dead Kennedys was actually Alternative Tentacles, but.
Right.
About 400 miles of difference. although, good friends, you know, always old buddies. And Geza X, actually, you're talking about rotten fruit for fresh vegetables and shit. Geza X produced that. He also did the six-pack Black Flag 7-inch and the No God Germ 7-inch. So all connected, especially in the older days when the scene was real small. So what happened after that gig? It was kind of a... it was an experience, right? Branded in the brain?
Yes. You can say that for sure.
Was there a second Bucks gig?
There was. That one was a little bit better. There was the local park. And one night, we were just there the night before, Friday night, drinking beer with our friends, right? We were all probably minors. We saw that on the main outdoor stage there, they had forgot to lock up the outlets. And so we said, hey, tomorrow, let's just call our friends. This was pre-internet. And let's just show up and play. And so we did, and that it went better than the Green Door, but not much better.
Not for the people picnicking in the park, though.
Right.
It was probably like Black Flag at Pollywog Park in Hermosa Beach. They did not dig it.
Our friends liked it, but not the innocent bystanders.
Well, that's what I meant, too. Look, but a farmer would tell you, Chris, if you want a good crop, use a lot of manure. So I say bring it, motherfucker. Look, I want to play something here. Corvette Winter by Refrigerant.
Great.
Like November. put my head up my neck and got it now up above the clouds.
Left the earth.
look out the window. There was nothing waiting for me. Everything outside my window. Everything outside the porch. Everything is being lost now. All love has been destroyed.
next one's called Tycoon.
Get this. Let's go!
Walk for Pedro show. Yes, that chunk of music started with Refrigerator doing Corvette Winter. And then Scotty Irvin, he's got a brand new album, and here's a tune from it, Starlight Hollow Revival, North Carolina. Deep in the Woods, 66, out of Dublin, Ireland, with Tommy O'Sullivan. He had me aboard for this tune, Cloud Walker. I had to think of words right away, so I thought of Misha Bokogov's Master Margarita. Oh, it ain't Sympathy for the Devil, it's Cloud Walker. SLWCC Watt after that. This is a project I did with Sam Lockward in Iowa City. Made the album. Just trading files. I've yet to meet the man, but he's a beautiful guy. So, Disinformation Casualty, The Married Ones with Bob Bucko, his buddy from Dubuque, a little bit north there, with Stark, Sam Lockward, Slow Gone. Part 15, Deck, I think it means December, Piana, abbreviation, from Joe Cardamone's Quarantina, little opera. Toy Mango with Lake out of Ithaca, upstate New York. Aruba Avua, Un Gosto de Ferro, and Stair Kids from No Wave Days, Tycoon Live, Done Deal, piece of Pedro hardcore, I think maybe the late 90s, Trailer Hitch Blues, and finally Refrigerator with Mask in the Morning. Chris, your turn. Earliest musical recollection, please.
Hey there. Yeah, driving with my mom in her car in the 70s and hearing Rhinestone Cowboy on the radio every hour.
Glenn Campbell.
What's that?
Glenn Campbell.
Yeah, Glenn Campbell. Yeah,
right, incredible session. Incredible session musician that couldn't read.
Mm-hmm.
All by ear. Yeah, shows to go you, right?
Yeah.
Okay, go on.
Yeah, I heard that, and then that was the first time I kind of even noticed music, and yeah, then, you know, got into my own stuff later, but, you know, first digging through my parents.
Let's get into your background, the pad you grew up, like, Alan had the pop, right, with the piano. Did you have family people that were doing music?
No, we had a piano in the house, but nobody played it.
Whoa, kind of like furniture.
It was furniture, yeah, and I don't think I even...
Art.
Yeah.
So what was the first record you bought for yourself with your own money?
Iron Maiden Killers.
And the first gig you went and saw?
It was with Dennis and Alan, who were in the band. We went to US Festival on the metal day.
That's kind of out where you guys live. That's Ontario, right?
Yeah, that was right by us.
Because I went to the first Cal Jam. I took the bus from fucking Long Beach, bus to Strong Beach, and then $2, 1974. It cost $6.50 to get into the gig. It's fucked up, though. I never went to another one of those things until I had to play them. So what about you in school? Were you in the choir, the marching band?
In fifth grade, the music teacher came into our class and showed us all the band instruments and, you know, wanted to see if anybody was interested in joining the school band. And for some reason, I decided to play clarinet. That lasted a year.
The licorice stick.
Yeah.
You know, that used to be really popular because it could cut through, especially with the swing bands. You know, there was a lot of band leaders that worked at Artie Shaw, right? Benny Goodman.
Yeah.
But it only lasted a year, huh? So you learned how to read a little music, and you played in the big old ensemble with the maybe eight other clarinet players and all the other cats, right? Okay.
Yeah.
How do you get rocking on what you play now?
Playing drums. I tried guitar, and I had a horrible teacher I learned like G and C chord. I got really frustrated and gave up on that and didn't do anything. And then I started listening to, you know, music with getting into drummers, you know, and realizing I wanted to be a drummer. And my parents said, if you're going to play drums, you got to buy your own set. So I bought my own kit, and I guess that made me more faithful to it.
Now, how did you know what kind of kit to get?
I found in the old recycler.
Recycler. That was, got all my shit, all my cars, all my instruments, everything came out of the recycler.
I found a Tama kit, and I knew that, like, that was a real drum kit. That, like,
Dave Grohl, right? I think Dave Grohl rocked those.
Yeah, and Stuart Copeland. I think that might have been, like, you know, realizing Stuart Copeland played that. I was starting to get into the Police and all that in the 80s.
But a poor carpenter blames his tools. How much did that kit cost you?
$400.
That's not too bad. With cymbals and shit?
Maybe it had hi-hats, but, you know, and yeah. It came with the hardware. By the way, the rest of the cymbals on my own.
Okay, where'd you prac?
In my room. I had enough room next to my bed I could squeeze.
You also had very cool parents.
Yeah, they weren't musical, but they were definitely tolerant. They let me wail away on the drums.
Now, I didn't ask Alan, but since he's in the fucking band, then I'm kind of asking you. Now, I'm not talking after school when you graduated, but like in the afternoon, right? The bedroom band, the basement band. Well, in your case, it was probably a bedroom band, right?
Yeah, I would play drums with Dennis and Alan. I knew them in high school. I've known them since I was in fifth grade.
So they brought their shit over. Because usually it's the drummers because the setup shit, right?
Yeah. So the band that the Bucks, I wasn't in it all the time, but I played on a couple of songs. That, you know, it was cool. Dennis and Alan were writing their own stuff. And
were you in the first Bucks, that first Bucks gig?
No, that was somebody else playing drums, but okay. It might have been my drum set. I might have loaned them the set.
Okay. So, but Refrigerator, well, explain to me how Refrigerator's connected to the Bucks.
Well, my brother and I, we had started the Bucks, and then we had the person who was our primary drummer in the Bucks just had a bunch of issues. Started stealing from the band, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. Which means you guys had some issues.
Right. And we had already booked a show at one of the local Claremont colleges, and then we were like, we were so mad, we were so pissed off at him, we were like, we're not going to ever be called the Bucks again. We already wanted to do more kind of serious kind of music. We were already going that way, which is already causing friction.
Oh, you know what? I forgot to ask you, Al. Were you guys fans of Dr. Demento?
Oh, my God.
That's what I thought. So was I.
The KMET 4-hour version.
That's right, on Sundays, right?
Yep.
Okay, go on. You guys want to play, but you don't want to be Bucks because of that fucked up drummer.
Right. Yeah. Good summary. We already had a show booked at the local college, so we're like, we're not going to be called that. So my brothers came up to me and he just said, we can either be called Dope, as a knock at our drummer on various levels, right? Being a dope, being on dope, whatever. Or he looked around, we were in the kitchen at the house we were renting, or we could be Refrigerator. I'm like, I don't even want to be in a band called Dope for a day.
I don't blame you, Alan. I do not blame you. Enough of that shit. So in the kitchen, you saw a fridge, and hence the name. Okay.
Yeah.
So that gig becomes a Refrigerator gig and not a Buck gig.
Right.
And it's got Chris on the drums.
Actually, you know what? It was before I joined. I was still knew these guys, but I was away in college, and they got a local drummer, Joel Connell, who plays in Man is the Bastard, has played in the past. He's got other stuff going on now. He's a drummer that's like way beyond like the kind of folksy music that, like, he's more of a prog drummer. And it was an interesting fit, actually. And
well, you know, music's music, right? Fuck genre.
Yeah.
You know, right? A vaudeville guy would tell you work the room.
Yeah.
And I think that's a great fucking ethic. So, because I was going to ask, if you were on that gig, you had to learn a bunch of songs really quick.
That came later after the band had been together for 2 or 3 years. I was in college, and I started running into Dennis again. And he said they had a tour booked and that they needed someone to fill in on drums. So I went with him and learned the songs like a day before we left town.
Fuck! One day!
Yeah.
Wow.
Now, I was winging it a lot.
Did you use a little book, charts, cheat sheets?
I had some cheat sheets, and I would write down what I thought was a song title, and a lot of times they didn't use the chorus as the title, so it would be some abstract name, and I'd have to figure it out like as the song started.
Thanks for helping out, Alan. I saw Terry Bozzio do a Fantoma gig at a stadium in, I don't know, Brazil or Argentina. And Terry Bozzio was doing Dave Lombardo, right? His part. And so he's got the shit written on a little book where he's turning the pages with the drumstick. Like the black page, right? It was several little white spiral notebook pages. I couldn't fucking believe it. The songs were like 45 seconds, you know. Anyway, shows to go, you're right. We reached the end of the first hour of the June 1, 2021 edition of Watt Peter Show special guests, Alan, Chris from Refrigerator. Hold tight for hour two. June 1, 2021, it's the second hour of Watt from Peter Show.
Oh, Matter. They're really tight.
Oh, they're really tight, yeah. That's the good for me, all right.
Oh.
before the wind blows away. That's been in vain. Praying on wooden stones to boil me. You call, collect, tell me your love is strong. Hope that you can remain open well.
Why for Pedro show start off the second hour with Refrigerator and Blueprints. Ben Salter after that. We had a little, drought of his music, and he got me this new record that's coming out. He's also 6 months on that museum in Tasmania. What's me do? I want to give him a tune for that. Lucas Abella from Sydney after that, not too far away. DeLorean. Interesting tune. Do you remember DeLoreans? You know, I've scrubbed pots and pans at a hospital. One of the doctors had one of those in the 70s, like brushed aluminum. Oh, it's in that fucking movie with Mike Fox, right?
Yeah, Back to the Future.
Last stop. Yeah, the thing is, the hatch, right? They come up, so if you roll the fucking vehicle, you ain't getting out. Last stop on the express from Black Randy and the Metro Squad. There's some, who's that guy in New York? He was just taped shit on the street. Alan Lomax or something.
Yeah.
No, but they were just preserving things. I think he did more folk singing and shit, but this guy...
Yeah, it was folkways.
Yeah, folkways, but this guy was just hanging a mic out the window. Anyway, Hanson Powdercker after that, Boiling Point Refrigerator after that with Bottles of Makeup. Right away, let's get into... I'm curious about how Refrigerator songs are written. Alan, would you like taking what you did with the fucking microwave poodle and just moving on to Chris World?
You
said you wanted to get more serious, right?
We got more serious, and even the last step of the bus, we were starting to go that way. So usually, now it's evolved, like, you know, sometimes you just write random lines and kind of a folder or, you know, a notepad, just words you hear or whatever. It will change. Both Chris writes some of the music songs for the band. My brother writes a lot of the music and lyrics. I do some of the lyrics as well and come up with the vocal melody. So we're pretty, we've been together so long now, we almost can just, we did a lot of the new record, we did a lot of just improvising actually, where we just have random lyrics. They would start playing and I would just grab one of the lyric sheets. I think this will fit what you guys are playing.
Can I, you mean, so you got like a fucking reservoir?
Alan can take, he'll go through his folder, I write, two or three of the songs on guitar per album, and I see Alan just, grab a book of lyrics and just, he'll just throw a vocal melody over something and find the right words, right back to lyrics.
So music actually does come first, but there's words, it's not like, oh, now I gotta write words to this, it's like you find words from his reservoir.
Oh yeah, and Dennis, both those guys,
right? Right.
All the lyrics, and they're prolific. Yeah, no shortage of lyrics.
And you being a drummer have no problem writing a song on a guitar.
No, no.
Even though you told me you had an early experience being really shitty on the guitar.
Yeah, I've been trying to come back from that ever since.
It's okay. It's okay. I'm just trying to show you I'm a good listener. Now, what about using the drums as a fucking musical composition tool?
There are times where that happens. I'll start playing a beat and you know, kind of work it in around whatever Dennis comes up with on guitar. And, you know, it's collaborative.
Yeah, because, you know, Chico Hamilton, this was a jazz world, right? He couldn't get songwriting credits. This is in the 60s, right? Drummers can't write songs. Fuck that.
Chico Hamilton's the first guy I saw with mallets. I saw Chico Hamilton.
George Hurley was way into that guy. A big influence on him. And he played with a guitar man from Hungary called Gabor Szabo, who lived in Pedro for a little bit. Look, I want to play Sweet Eight.
I hear moment. And now she started the conversation to the bartender. He thinks his sheets don't stink. She coughed me off guard. She later said that she was in a long-distance relationship. And restraining orders are weird and tricky. My MacBook told me to close the cover before striking. And I got myself some more whiskey. It takes four strings to get that far. She still just wants to know what kind of car does Jimmy Hayes drive. She says I feel so alive. A guy in a great Devo shirt declared that he likes the dead Kennedys, and his Republican girlfriend likes dead Kennedys. It's okay, though. I've gotten comfortable with being uncomfortable. Then I told this guy to my left to fish like he was skateboarding. He didn't get it, but he got the next round of drinks all the same. Fishing was his life, he said. That is some weird kind of blackjack game he plays at Commerce on Mondays. I tell myself all kinds of lies.
Bridges and he built. Thank you.
past is blind. The past is lost. Getting dusted at the T-Bird. It ain't even new.
For Pedro Show, we started that chunk of music with Refrigerator doing Sweet Eight. And then Are You Cop? They got a brand new record, and this tune is What Kind of Car Does Gibby Haynes Drive? People who ask questions with songs, how are you supposed to answer them? I guess at the gig, you scream at them. Public Record after that, Uncle Sam. Giovanni Aldoppio Gene, Vestito Funebre. Lewis Cole featuring Genevieve Artadi with When You're Ugly. And finally, High Desert Lows from Refrigerator. So, let me ask you about the record. Do you record in Claremont?
That song you just played, High Desert Lows, we recorded in Omaha, Nebraska. A friend of ours, Simon Joyner, lives out there. And we decided to collaborate with him and work out there. And then, yeah, but most of the time we record here in Claremont.
And mm-hmm. What's the sitch? Is there a studio?
Yeah. That guy, Steve Folta, you interviewed a little while ago.
Yeah, drummer man, right.
I have a rehearsal space with him, and he's got a whole recording set up in there. We'll do that, or we record at Dennis's house, our guitar player. We've recorded a few albums there.
Chris, that's one of the reasons I asked, because a lot of cats are recording themselves, right, that play nowadays. And it's not.
Yeah.
I don't think it's a terrible thing. For one thing, it's more econo, and you got more control. But the other thing is you can't blame it on the fucking engineer producer. So pluses and minuses. So in Omaha, Pete Boone's daddy was Nebraska.
Oh.
There's a lot of happening music. Well, that's all over the fucking country. So what was it, like a tour stop, or did you, or trading files?
No, we flew out there and stayed in town for a week and recorded every day for like 5 days. We got all the tracks done in 5 days, and then our friend Simon that lives out there had some friends come in and do strings after the fact, and we kind of approved or, you know, kept or left off things that worked with a friend that played violin and added some stuff to the tracks.
Yeah, and we played a couple shows while we were out there as well.
There used to be a pad there called the Ranch Bowl. It was a bowling alley, right? That was the only gig in Omaha for years. It had a radio station, all kinds of shit, but it was basically a bowling alley on the outside of town, like the old, like a more modern version of the Roadhouse, right? Out of town, you know. So let's get back to Refrigerator. This latest record, would you consider it self-produced?
Well, that Steve Folta recorded it at Dennis's house with his, you know, his high-tech recording gear. But we were on, you know, Dennis's wood floors in his living room.
What I mean by produce, like an engineer actually has his hands on the equipment, right? And a producer is a kind of a cat with the big picture. He's not so technically.
It's all four of us usually just hashing out ideas. Like a lot of times me and Dennis will just get into, you know, discussions or debates about how something should sound after we do it. We just try it out first and see what's worth keeping.
You mean as far as the take?
Yeah, the take.
Okay, like that's what you're talking about. Well, you know, it could happen in the mix. I don't know, you know. I'm working on the mind reading. We won't have to use words after a while, guy. Let's just pull it right out of your fucking head. I'm just curious on the process because, you know, with self-recording, self-producing, right? It's sort of like maybe, let's say it was the old days and you had a story to tell and only one dude in town knew how to write, you know, use handwriting. So everybody had to go to him and he'd write down the story, right?
Now, scribe,
The scribe. Good point, Al. So that's why I kind of asked that stuff. And do you go for the full band or is it like, let's just get the rhythm track? Let's, and then overdubs and.
No, we do the full band. We do like a live take with everything, and we'll keep the vocals if we can. Alan's usually like, you know, in another room, and he's coming in through the headphones.
Yeah.
So we try to keep the original vocals, but if there's too much bleed or whatever, he'll do like, you know, a little additional recording of the vocals.
Well, the good thing about a scratch voice, I think, is so the band members, the guys who ain't singing, or even the other singers, they don't have to count.
Yeah,
and it's so fucking hard to do a good take when you're like on number 17. Is it 18? Is it 19? Oh, is it 13? Yeah. So when the guy's singing, even though you're right, it might not be usable at the end of the day, it was something to keep the team together.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sometimes you think, oh man, recording's just like doing a gig in front of a microphone, but in ways it ain't. And in some ways, that's good, right? There's a little more flexibility. Like, you can do a second take. You do that at a gig, people are going to let you know about it.
Right? Yeah, we've been on that end of it.
Where you played one song many times?
Just a false start, you got to do it over again, and you're like 30 seconds into the song. Hopefully, try to cut back on that.
The first few years of me helping the Stooges, we used to do every night, every gig was two versions of I Want to Be Your Dog. And the only difference was Brother Steve would come in on the sax. By the way, that's the only time I recorded in Claremont. I can't remember. It was a home studio. But I got to record with Brother Steve there in Kamielski from the Czech Republic. I wish but my memory. Like that guy who blew himself up in his basement, right? The JPL guy. What's his name? Pollard? You know about
that? I don't know that story.
Yeah, he was trying to make a homo nucleus or some shit with nitroglycerin and Aleister Crowley. See, this guy was buddies with L. Ron Hubbard. Yeah, and started part of our space program at the beginning. We're at the end of the second hour, June 1, 2021, Dish Watt Peter Show. Special guest, Alan, Chris, Refrigerator. Hold tight for hour three. June 1, 2021. It's the third hour of the Watt for Peter Show.
You can
for Baltimore. Drag my body through the ditch, sing my swan song in perfect pitch. To the ghost of Maryland, I'll be breaking out this graveyard. There'll be no headstone, just an empty coffin and a neon sign without a
Pedro Show starts the third hour. Refrigerator, Greyhound, Sundown. I find a rhyme. Kiwi Jr. after that with Dodger. Maritime Guys in Toronto, the big town. Troopa Troop out of Poland with Exist. Pino Ventana. Here's Jason Lafarge, a bass man in Brooklyn, Caesar's Palace. A tune called Divide. He knew Brother Steve and recorded several times with him. Slang after that from Hokkaido with the Immortal Sin, and finally Baltimore. You know, that's how they say it over there. Refrigerator. Now, did this record, I mean, do Refrigerator records have themes, or are they a collection of songs?
Sometimes they have a theme, like we had an earlier record called Comedy Minus One, which was all about the fallout from our drummer from the Bucks, and that break up.
Drama.
Yep.
Yeah. And sometimes we'll have a record where we don't know if there's a theme to it, but once it comes all together, it's almost like a subconscious thing. You could say, oh, that's what this was about, but you don't realize it at the time.
You did it without trying, you're saying.
Exactly.
Yeah, maybe that's better, because maybe not so forced and, kind of ham-fisted. I'm just interested because, when I'm listening to your stuff, it seems to have threads. And you know, that's what music's about. Even though you might not be in touch or you can't articulate it, it's still running through this stuff. I'm so glad you got the drummer part of the songwriting process. That's beautiful. I wish more and more of that happened, just like home recording, you know. It seemed there was so much hierarchy in the old days.
Yeah. And yeah, we're definitely democratic. I mean, I think Dennis, the guitar player, and I doing drums, like, we work out the production the most, like how the music's going to sound or what we're going to put on the recording, especially for overdubs.
And I think you have to leave your ego down. Like, you have to trust who you're collaborating with. If they have a suggestion, listen to it, try it out. Nobody's trying to take the spotlight. It's whatever for the better of the song. I think we all have a really healthy relationship.
I could guess. Great. Because that's ensemble playing, right? And whenever you get more than one guy playing, you're trying to make an interesting conversation, I think. Or I would hope.
Right.
You know? This other stuff where we try to, like, I don't know, convert our other experiences of human slavery and bigotry and shit into the fucking band format. Why? Why in this one artistic kind of endeavor we can get a little idealistic and try to function that way a little bit? Okay, look at this one. Talk about a fucking optimistic song title. Jealousy is Gone.
Jealousy is 足立ヶ原。昔、京都から諸国修行に出た坊さんが、白川の関を越えて、奥州に入りました。いわきの国の福島に近い、足立ヶ原という原にかかりますと、短い秋の日がとっぷり暮れました。坊さんは一日寂しい道を歩きに歩いて、お腹はすくし、喉は乾くし、何よりも足がくたびれきって、この先、歩きたくても歩けなくなりました。どこぞに百姓屋でも見つけ次第、頼んで一晩泊めてもらおうかと思いましたが、折りやすく腹の中にかかって、見渡す限り、ぼうぼうと草ばかり生い茂った秋の野末の景色で、それらしい煙の上がるうちも見えません。もうどうしようか、いっそ野宿と決めようか。それにしても、こうお腹が空いてはやりきれない。せめて水でも飲ましてくれるうちはないかしらと、心細く思いながら、とぼとぼ歩いていきますと、ふと向こうにちらりと明かりが一つ見えました。やれやれありがたい、これで助かった、と思って一生懸命明かりを目当てにたどっていきますと、なるほど、うちがあるにはありましたが、これはひどい野中の一つ屋で、軒は崩れ、柱は傾いて、うちというのも名ばかりのひどいあばら屋でしたから、坊さんは二度びっくりして、さすがにすぐに中へ入りかねていました。すると中では、かすかな破れ行灯のほかげで、一人のおばあさんが、しきりと糸を食っている様子でしたが、その時、障子の穴から痩せた顔を出して、もしもし、お坊様、そこに何をしておいでだ、と声をかけました。出し抜けに呼びかけられたので、坊さんは思わずぎょっとしながら、ああ、おばあさん、実はこの腹の中で日が暮れたので、泊まるうちがなくて困っているものです。今夜一晩どうかして泊めてはいただけますまいか、と言いました。するとおばあさんは、おやおや、それはお困りだろう。だがご覧の通り、腹中の一軒家で、せっかくお泊め申しても、着て寝る布団の一枚もありませんよ、と断りました。坊さんは、おばあさんが親切そうなので、やっと安心して、いえいえ、雨露さえしのげれば結構です。どんなんぞの心配はいりませんから、どうぞお止めなすってください、と頼みました。おばあさんはニコニコ笑いながら、まあまあそういうわけなら、ご不自由でも今夜はうちに上がってゆっくり休んでおいでなさい、と言って、坊さんを上へ上げてくれました。坊さんはたびたびお礼を言いながら、わらじを脱いで上へ上がりました。 おばあさんは、いろりに薪をくべて、暖かくしてくれたり、おかゆを炊いて、お夕飯を食べさせてくれたり、いろいろ親切にもてなしてくれました。それで、坊さんも、見かけによらない、これはいいうちに泊まり合わせたと、すっかり安心して、繰り返し繰り返し、おばあさんにお礼を言っていました。お夕飯が済むと、坊さんは炉端に座って、焚き火に当たりながら、いろいろ旅の話をしますと、おばあさんはいちいちうなずいて聞きながら、せっせと糸車を回していました。そのうち、だんだん夜が更けるに従って、ただでさえあばら屋のことですから、外の冷たい風が遠慮なく方々から入り込んで、しんしんと夜寒が身にしみます。けれど、あいにくなことには、炉の方の火がだんだん心細くなって、ありったけの薪はとうに燃やし尽くしてしまいました。おばあさんは、坊さんが寒そうに震えているのを見て、おやおや、薪がみんななくなりましたか。お客様があると知ったら、もっとたくさん取っておけばよかったものを、気のつかないことをしました。どれどれ、ちょっと裏の山へ行って、薪を取ってきますから、お坊様、しばらく退屈でも、お留守番をお頼み申します。こう言って、おばあさんは出て行こうとしました。すると、坊さんは大層気の毒がって、いやいや、この夜更けに、そんなご苦労をかけてはすみません。なんなら私が一走り行って取ってきましょう。と言いますと、おばあさんは手を振って、どうしてとんでもない。旅の人にわかるものではない。まあまあ、何にもごちそうのない一つ屋のことだから。せめて焚き火でもごちそうのうちだと思ってもらいましょう。と言い、出かけて行きましたが、何を思ったのか戻ってきて、その代わりお坊様、しっかり頼んでおきますが、私が帰ってくるまで、あなたはそこにじっと座っていて、どこへも動かないでください。うっかり動いて、次の間を覗いたりなんぞしてはいけません。と繰り返し、繰り返し、念を押しました。どういうわけだか知りませんが、無論用もないのに、人のうちの中なんぞを勝手に覗いたりしませんから安心してください。と坊さんも言いました。それでおばあさんも安心したらしく、そのまま出て行きました。さて、おばあさんが出て行ってしまうと、坊さんはただ一人、しばらくはつくねんと、炉端に座ったまま、おばあさんの帰りを待っていましたが、じき帰ると思ったおばあさんは、なかなか帰ってきません。何しろ、西も東もわからない、原中の一軒家で、 一人ぼっちで取り残されたのですから、心細いし、だんだん心配になってきました。なんでも足立ヶ原の黒塚には鬼が住んでいて、人を取って食うそうだ、などという、旅の間に小耳に挟んだ噂を急に思い出すと、体中の毛穴がぞっと立つように思いました。そういえば、こんな寂しい腹中におばあさんが一人住んでいるというのもおかしいし、さっき出かけに妙なことを言って、たびたび念を押していったが、もしやこのうちが鬼の住みかなのではないか。一体見るなと言った次の間には何があるのだろう。こう思うと怖いし気になるし、だんだんじっと辛抱していられなくなりました。それでもあれほど固く見るなと言われたものを見ては、なおさらどんな災難があるかもしれません。坊さんはしばらく見ようか見まいか立ったり座ったり迷っていましたが、おばあさんはやっぱり帰ってこないので、とうとう思い切ってそっと立っていって次の間の襖を開けました。すると坊さんは驚いたの、驚かないのではありません。開けると一緒に中からプンと血生臭い匂いが立って、人間の死骸らしいものが天井まで高く積み重ねてありました。そして崩れてドロドロになった肉が、血と一緒に流れ出していました。坊さんは、ああ、と言ったなり、しばらく腰を抜かして、目ばかり白黒させたまま起き上がることもできませんでした。そのうちふと気がつくと、これこそ話に聞いた一つ屋の鬼だ。ぐずぐずしているととんでもないことになると思って、慌ててわらじの紐を結ぶ暇もなく逃げ出そうとしました。けれども今にも後ろから鬼ババアに襟首をつかまれそうな気がして、気ばかりがせいて腰がわなわな震えるので、足が一向に進みません。それでも転んだり起きたり、めくらめっぽうに腹の中を駆け出していきますと、ものの五六丁もいかないうちに暗闇の中で、おーい、おーい、と呼ぶ声がしました。その声を聞くと、坊さんは、さてこそ鬼ババアが追っかけてきたとガタガタ震えながら、耳を塞いでどんどん駆け出して行きました。そして心の中で鬼よけの呪文を一生懸命唱えていました。そのうち、おーい、待て、おーい、待て、と叫ぶ。鬼ババアの声がずんずん近くなって、やがて怒った声で、やい、坊主め、あれほど見るなと言った部屋をなぜ見たのだ。逃げたって逃がしはしないぞ。というのが手に取るように聞こえるので、坊さんはもういよいよ絶対絶命と覚悟を決めて、一心にお経を唱えながら、 走れるだけ走って行きました。すると、お経の功徳でしょうか。もうそろそろ夜が明けかかってきたので、鬼も怖くなったのでしょうか。鬼の足がだんだんのろくなって、間が遠くなりました。そのうち、ずんずん空は明るくなってきて、東の空が薄赤く染まってくると、どこかの村で鶏の泣き立てる声が勇ましく聞こえました。もう夜が明けてしまえば閉めたものです。鬼は真昼の光にあっては意気地のないものですから、恨めしそうに、しばらくは坊さんの後ろ姿を遠くから眺めていましたが、ふいと姿が消えて見えなくなりました。坊さんはそのうち人里に出て、ほっと一息つきました。そして華やかに差し上った朝日に向かって手を合わせました。
Walk for Pedro Show last music for this edition. Jealousy is Gone from Refrigerator. You know, I was listening to the two guys who did that 70s label in Philadelphia with the kind of their answer to Motown, right? And who's that lady? You would know her voice on the NPR. Terry Gross, right?
Terry Gross, yeah.
What song should we end with? And the guy said, let's be optimistic. Play Love Train. Get on board the Love Train. You know, and that's what I thought of that. But you told me you've got some insights you could enlighten us with?
For that song, yeah. We collaborated on this latest album with a guy named Mark Givens from Wicker Spigot, another Claremont band. And he played guitar along with Dennis on this whole album and wrote a lot of the lyrics. He wrote the lyrics for that one.
And I think it's one of those difficult lyrics to write are the positive, optimistic lyrics. I do.
No, I agree. I agree. I should tell the people after that, we heard Few doing an old story, the Yoni Baba of Adachi Gahara. Few. Fusan, Oni Baba, old demon lady, old witch. And finally, Refrigerator with Broken Glass Shore. So, it was a four-piece, this album.
Actually, five. We have our bass player, Daniel, plays on all our albums, and he's a permanent member. And then I play drums, Dennis plays guitar, and Alan sings. And then we invited our friend Mark from Spigot to play guitar. And he
I understand. Okay. God, how can I forget the bass?
Yeah, we got to.
Please drive down to Pedro and shoot me. Look. Tell me about the Claremont scene in 2021.
I think it's very persevered a lot of scenes because this started like 20 plus years ago. And so many of the other scenes around the country or whatever, they kind of evaporated. But I'm happy to say that it's probably a good 2/3, maybe more, of the bands that started are still here doing things, from the Mountain Goats to Wicker Spigot to us to
Franklin Bruno's from here. And
he was on the show. He was on the show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Dennis, our guitar player, started the record label Shrimper, and he still runs that. And that's kind of probably how we met all these bands. It's sort of magnetized all these other musicians from the area to, like, form around one scene. So the Mountain Goats were here way back when, and Franklin's moved to New York, and the Mountain Goats are on the
North Carolina.
North Carolina, right. Can I ask you something? Because you said at the beginning of the show stuff about SST. The one trippy thing about SST, tell me if I'm wrong, there wasn't really a sound. Husker Du, Meat Puppets, Black Flag, Minutemen, they didn't sound like each other.
And you know what? My brother, he started Shrimper. That was the template, was SST. Like, hey, SST can have all these bands that sound wildly different, which we thought was interesting because Wicker Spigot sounds nothing like us, like the Mountain Goats. We find that interesting and liberating and just the way to go.
I think that's great. And what about radio? Since what, there's four or five colleges?
Yeah, and the college radio station, KSBC, they play a lot of local music, and there's some really good shows on there.
And they birthed Refrigerator in a way because we had no money whatsoever to record in a studio. So the first Refrigerator cassette, we did a live show on KSBC, and we used that as the first Refrigerator cassette.
Because in a way, it's a fucking studio, right?
Right. That was our thinking.
Yeah, smart thinking, Al. And so, like the tune, No Jealousy, there's not big rival. People pull together in the Claremont scene.
Yeah,
that's true.
Uh-oh, I felt some hesitation.
No. It's like, I don't know what the song's about that. Maybe. I'd have to ask Mark. But definitely, there's not like any scene rivalries, if there even is much of a scene.
And I think that's why it's persevered, because if you have that type of rivalry, it can be toxic and cancerous to everything.
So, you know, there's an old aphorism, right? I'm not saying it's true, but familiarity breeds contempt.
Yeah.
Oh, you mean you agree with that?
No, I agree that that's a thing.
Well, what you need is a little...
No, it's not true for us.
What I'm saying is a little autonomy helps, a little thermos bottle, so you keep your little worlds, but you're still... Like, you're on the same boat, but you're in different compartments.
I guess that's fair. And for us, we've always liked to have people like Mark Gibbons on the new record, or Franklin's been on many of our records. We've always been a pretty collaborative group. We've almost, even with this record, Mark came about playing on the whole thing because he was the only musician in this area that had never appeared with us playing a song with us live or on a recording. So we corrected that. With this record, we've completed our Inland Empire Shrimper Scene collection with collaborating.
Now, you would consider Claremont Inland Empire?
Yes.
Yeah.
Because everybody, it seems these days, everybody thinks SGV, right?
I guess technically, but like maybe geologically we're in the San Gabriel Valley, but I think
geographically
culturally...
probably.
But,
or unless you're a volcano.
We are.
We might physically be in that valley, but we are part of the IE, I guess.
Well, you are part of those foothills for sure. I mean, the freeway, I think the I-210 is called Foothill. Next plan for refrigerator.
We've got a lot of things on that we're trying to get to. We're working on a project with Amy Maloof from Falconetti and the writer Jonathan Lethem.
Speaking of the radio, he's a DJ, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Motherless Brooklyn, a great fucking book. Where can people find you on the internet?
I think it's shrimper.com, shrimperrecords.com.
To get more information on Refrigerator, I can't wait to hear your next thing. It's going to have a collab, right? The Falcon Eddie lady.
Yeah.
When you get it done, will you come back on the show? Can we talk about it?
We'd love to.
For sure.
Okay. We'd love to.
Thanks so much, Alan.
Thanks.
Chris, you're beautiful. People, it's been the June 1, 2021 edition of WAP Pedro Show. Keep your powder dry.